Josephus note the Sanhedrin was very corrupt. Too many members of the Sanhedrin would do anything to stay in power. And no doubt that Jesus said one member of the Sanhedrin was working for Romans. He also relied upon traders, merchants, guilty contacts. Keep an eye out what's going on out in the province. Let me know what the people are doing, what they're saying, who's going where, and so on. Pilate's behaviour during the trial suggests that he was very well aware of what's going on in his province. He was no ignoramus. The Roman governors had also learned through bitter experience to flee Jerusalem during the Passover and to bring along extra troops. There was always trouble at the Passover. Barabbas was encamped on the trouble of some sort of insurrection. We know no other details of that, but obviously before that part, that final Passover of Christ, there was some sort of disturbance in the city. Was picked up in the sweep and thrown into jail. So Pilate would have arrived in Jerusalem well before Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem itself. We look at the charges that were given in Luke chapter 23, verse 1. There was three of them. Pilate didn't care about the first one. Subverting our nation or people. Pilate couldn't care less about that. He was more interested in what effect did Christ have on Rome's interests. Now, the first one Pilate was interested in was the second one. That was the payment of taxes to Caesar. Pilate's most important role as governor was to bring money into the Roman treasury. The province of Judea would have been tasked every year with providing a certain amount of gold, silver, goods, food, etc. for Rome. And providing that was done, Pilate was considered to have done his job. That was his first and greatest role. So any hint of taxes not being paid would earn Pilate's very close interest. He couldn't afford to have the people of the province decide whether or not they taxes to Rome. Now we must note that Luke heavily abbreviates the trial. There's an awful lot missing in the trial that Christ mentioned here that we don't know about. And all the Gospels suffer from that. Each author has highlighted the bits that they wish to tell. But between the four, we can come up with a pretty good idea of what went on. Pilate would have asked the Sanhedrin, when did Jesus say not pay taxes? What did he mean? How did it happen? In Luke chapter 20, verses 20 and 26, we have the story, of course, of who we pay taxes to. Christ was asked, should we pay taxes to Caesar? A direct question, not Sanhedrin was trying to trap Christ. But of course, he gave his very famous reply. Give to God the things that are God, give to Caesar the things that are Caesar. And in Matthew chapter 21, 12 and 13, and also the book of Mark, we have where Christ chased the money lenders out of the temple. These both occurred in the last week of Jesus' life when Pilate was in Jerusalem. And obviously the Jewish leaders' charge of not paying taxes was based upon these two instances. Yet why would Pilate ignore such an important accusation? In fact, Pilate never addresses that accusation at all in Luke's account. It's totally ignored according to Luke's account. And the question is why? Why would Pilate seemingly ignore a capital charge of not paying taxes to Rome? Or telling people not to pay taxes? Romans were most insistent you pay your taxes or you pay the penalty for it. Why would Pilate ignore it? There was apparent good evidence. Two instances would have been relayed to Pilate about where Christ allegedly said, don't pay taxes to Caesar. In verse 3, Pilate ignores the tax question and focuses on the claims of the kingship. Pilate was obviously aware of these instances. He spied for Sanhedrin. He was well aware that Christ was there because of jealousy. The Sanhedrin was jealous of Christ and followed him. The reports would have told him what happened and when. Merchants would have contacted Pilate if they felt there was a disturbance in the city and taxes were being paid. Pilate knew all this, and he must have concluded, even though it's not mentioned in any of the Gospels, that this accusation of Christ had no basis. Christ was not a threat to Rome's financial interests. Pilate at some stage must have said to the Sanhedrin, it's our actions, our attitudes, our behavior. We are held accountable to God for what we do, even though we're following God's plan. So does this make God capricious? Does that mean he acts on a whim? Is God unfair? Is it just survival of the fittest? Does God toy with us? Last night, I watched again, I watched many times, an interview with the actor Stephen Fry. And Stephen Fry was asked the question, when you meet God, what will you say to him? And so Stephen Fry went on a bit of a rant about it. But at the end, he noted that he said he thought God was capricious. God was unfair. Does God have no consistency or coherency? Or is it just based on whim? The Jews were very familiar with the gods around them, Roman gods, Greek gods, Egyptian gods. All these gods were capricious and acted on whims. There was no plan, there was no rhyme or reason for what they did. The gods were duplicitous. They couldn't be trusted. That's a theme that Jews will have learned from the gods around them. The gods, the people around them, could not be trusted. And the Jews believe God can be trusted. And we as Christians surely should believe that God can be trusted. So no, God is not capricious. God is not unfair. And as I said, God's sovereignty interacts with our willingness to rebel. And only one of us can. So as our society moves into a post-Christian look, or outlook, you'll be asked more and more, why do you worship a God that Stephen Fry thinks is capricious? They will say, why do you worship a God who seems so determined to blame you for everything that goes wrong, yet will not apparently take responsibility for his own actions? Worshipping such a God would seem to be the height of foolishness. So rebelling against such a God would be seen as an act of validation, a lack of authenticity, and a desperate dash for freedom. chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount says, let your light shine. What light did those men show? They've shown that they're doing business. They've shown that they're light. And they did it using God's name. Publicly, in public. And they can't claim they were tricked. They knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly what they were doing. They did it. They refused to apologize unless they apologized in the last 24 hours. The opposition leader, Matthew Guy, I believe by the way, has said,